friends, and welcome to this week's edition of Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS. Dear JCPS is a district-focused stakeholder advocacy group that demands accountability and transparency from JCPS through a lens of equity. Save Our Schools Kentucky is a statewide advocacy group that seeks to expose and prevent attempts to privatize our public schools, including charter schools and everything else from the ALEC playbook.
Hi, everybody at home. This is Yvonne Rovira, and I'm here with, you know, I'm the sidekick. I'm here with our host, Gay Adelman. Say hi.
I'm the sidekick.
No sidekicking. No sidekicking for you. So we're co-hosts now. Anyway, and we are so lucky because with us, to give us election analysis, is the lovely and talented Bruce Maples.
And hello to everyone.
He is the editor of Forward Kentucky. In the interest of full disclosure, he puts up with me and publishes my stuff. So we got that admission out of the way.
In so, mine on occasion. You published something of mine this week, actually.
I did.
On a long time.
That's true, Gay too. So you know what conflicts of interest we have.
True.
But Bruce is a super political analyst. Gosh, I can't talk today. And he's going to talk to us about the recent primaries. Let's talk about Charles Booker and how amazingly close he came to winning this primary. Did you see this coming?
When? If you ask me, did I see it 8 weeks ago? No. Did I see it 4 weeks ago? Not necessarily. Did I see it 3 weeks ago? Yeah. He closed with a rush. And the biggest problem, my opinion, that he and Breuer both had was name recognition. I mean, McGrath has huge name recognition from her last race, where plus everybody money across the state was hoping she could, you know, beat Andy Barr. Charles Booker is well known in Louisville, and he's well known to people who follow politics. But, you know, as Barry Craig said when I talked to him the other day, he said, up until maybe a week ago, nobody west of I-65 had ever heard of it. In fact, some of them knew Breuer more than they knew Booker, simply because of some of the indivisible endorsements and so on and so forth. And then he just closed with this rush. And quite frankly, if you say, did you see it coming? I really got up on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, when they announced the results. And I thought to myself, I think he's going to pull this off. I think he's going to win this thing. And then I saw the Fayette County results. And I said, that's not good. And I was, you know, following everything on Twitter. And Phil Bailey or Joe Zonka, Joe Zonka is a big spreadsheet guy. So he had done a bunch of modeling. And then Phil Bailey and he had talked about it. And they were saying, you know, he's got to have 48,000 coming out of – he's got to have a margin of 48,000 in Louisville to win this thing. And, of course, he didn't. He – 36,000 or whatever it was, 38,000. And then today, I think it was Robert Connie who posted, if he had had a margin – apparently the Booker team, their plan was to get a margin of 10,000 in Fayette County. And they thought they could do that. And their margin was only 3,500. And if you look at what he lost by, that tells you a lot right there. The other thing that one person has posited is that Northern Kentucky didn't do at all what he thought it was going to do. They thought they would get a lot out of Northern Kentucky. And Al Cross said in an email, I think, to me that McGrath went into Northern Kentucky and was just talking about being from Northern Kentucky and ran ads in Northern Kentucky only talking about being from Northern Kentucky. And that hurt you know, Booker up there as well. Now, I'll tell you quite frankly, everybody who talked to me said, you know, do you think he can actually win this? And I said, look, if you had asked me in January when he announced if a black state representative from West Louisville could win a statewide race, I would have said, are you crazy? No, of course not. But this is not a normal year. And this is not a normal time. I mean, we had Black Lives Matter marches in Corbin and Harlem. So, yeah, I thought he had a shot. On KET Tonight, I think it was, they asked one of the participants, I want to say it was Scott Jennings, but I don't remember for sure. If the election had been held 1 week later, do you think he would have won? And the person said, yeah. I think if it had been 1 week later, he might have won. But, you know, he was harmed by the mail-in voting because so many people sent their ballots in early. But as Phil Bailey pointed out on Twitter, somebody talked about, you know, if it had been a week later and he was hurt by the mail-in voting. And Bailey pointed out, look, Booker had three timeouts. You know, he had the coronavirus that shut down everybody's campaigns. And then he had the delay of the primary. And then he had the early voting. So all of these things, if the election had been held where it was supposed to be, he wouldn't have come close.
Nope.
So, and the other thing, and I'm going to say this too, and I, you know, might get myself in trouble, but two or three of us were talking back when he announced, and one person said to me, why would he do that? He's got that seat in West Louisville that he can have forever if he wants it. And he can set himself up to run for state senate from that part of the state, and then he could run for Yarmouth's seat. You know, when John decides not to run anymore. Why would he throw all that away to go after somebody who's raised $40 million? Well, that's probably a really good question, except that's not how it all turned out. You know, and somebody, so this is my last comment about Charles Booker, unless you ask me another question. Somebody said, you know, as close as he got to her and as strong as he ran, he has set himself up really well for another race down the road. And somebody said to me, you know, I think he should take on Rand Paul.
You're not,
that would be,
that's all over.
I think that would be a fascinating race. So, you know, I thought he was going to do it. I really, truly did. I got up
today
and said, okay, we're going to see a shocker today. And we just about did.
Well, and when everybody went to bed after the in-person polling, he was ahead. And so it stood for a week that he was ahead. And so right. I think a lot of us went into the 30th thinking that it, you know, might right. be close or whatever, a little give and take. But I think we felt pretty confident. And it shows you that the early voting did hurt people who voted a week or two in advance, maybe hadn't heard of him yet.
Yeah.
And I ran into a lot of people that said, I wish I hadn't mailed in my ballot so early because I would have changed my vote. So I think the early voting did hurt him, clearly. But like you said, Bruce, the original election date was back in May. And if it had been held then, he would have definitely not won. There were so much dynamics at play with the pandemic and the uprising and the Breonna Taylor case and just all eyes on Kentucky situation. And if we had all voted on that day on June 23rd, I think he clearly would have won, but because of
yes.
the early in-person.
That was talked about as well. If we had not had the absentee voting and everybody had to go vote in
if
person.
In Wisconsin.
He probably would have won.
Yep.
You know, absolutely. Will I trade unlimited absentee balloting for Charles losing? I might, because I'd like to have unlimited absentee balloting forever.
Right.
But,
right.
But, you know, I think so. We've got where we can look at it here, some of the other results. There's a couple of other surprises to me in the results. I frankly was very surprised at how little traction Mike Breuer got. And that may be just because I'm a political junkie and we had him on as well as other people. And, you know, I really thought he would get more. But he only got, he just got right at 5%. And then you've got all these other candidates, except Marianne Tobin. I mean,
who is she?
I'm not sure I can tell you, frankly. I mean, Maggie Jo Hilliard, we did a story about her, but I don't, Marianne Tobin, but she got 2%, you know, and Breuer only got 5, so.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
I thought Breuer and Booker would split the anti-Amy vote.
I'm
glad it didn't shake out that way, but.
Oh, no, I did too.
Or maybe it did.
Well, people are pointing fingers at Breuer and saying, well, he took, 27,000 votes. And if all those had gone to Charles, Charles would have won. Well, you know, if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, then all the world would be Christmas.
there's a lot of ifs.
That you can. I'm going to steal that.
So did we ever find out what caused 6,000 votes in Fayette County to be dismissed?
It was Jefferson County. Jefferson County.
No, Fayette County.
They had 6,000. They had 6,000 ballots that they didn't want to use because you had to go down. They didn't think that your signature on your ballot matched what they had, or it was kind of crooked, or whatever.
It's a common problem with absentee voting. Every year. Every time you have absentee voting, there's people whose ballots are rejected. I mean, think back to the 2018 election and the race up there with what's his name? I can't remember his name. That was one vote, right?
The guy out of Bowling Green.
And they did the recount, and the problem came down to the absentee ballots and saying, is this valid or not? You know. So that's a shame, but a lot of people, you'd be surprised at the number of people who don't read instructions.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and like if they had been required to do in person, then those ballots would have more likely cured. We wouldn't have nearly as many. There are people who requested the mail-in ballot. It never came. There are people who maybe requested it, didn't do. If it was back before May 26th, they had to request an application for a mail-in ballot. So
the
second and third step creates a lot of lost mail and opportunities, barriers and opportunities for things to fall through the cracks. We met a lot of people on Election Day at the end at the fairgrounds who told us that their mail-in ballot never came. Mm-hmm. And so the reason they were voting in person was because they had waited as long as they were an at-risk category. It was mostly Black community members from the West End who we were interviewing that were coming in and rushing in at the last minute to vote. And because they're in a high-risk category, they had tried to do the mail-in ballot, but when it didn't come on Election Day, they were left with no choice but to come down to the fairgrounds.
Right.
And then we witnessed traffic backups starting at 3:30. It took me 30 minutes to get into the parking lot.
Sure.
So I started alerting some of my friends and saying, hey, somebody needs to raise this alarm because I don't think they have a plan. And at 5 o'clock, the wait was over an hour. So the people who, those 280 some odd or almost 300 people who got to vote because of that injunction, they had all been waiting in traffic for over an hour.
Right.
So what about the line of traffic behind them? Where was someone to make sure they all had an opportunity to park or be counted as being in line? Because in today's era of drive-through graduations and churches, why wouldn't you count the car line waiting to get into the fairgrounds as being in line? Because they're practicing social distancing as they move through to get to the polling grounds. And after that, they had
all legitimate, all issues that need to be talked about and addressed. But as much as I agree with you that they need to be talked about, and they do, and they need to be fixed, and they do, there's not 26,000 of them. And that's what Charles needed to beat her. And if you look at the map that I put up today, she won every county.
16,000, I think, no? She won by 16,000.
16,000, you're right. She won every county except five.
Except for like five.
He won five counties, which, by the way, is kind of interesting if you look at the five counties. I mean, that's kind of interesting. And there's some analysis of that about how many black people live in that those counties, and are there schools in those counties, colleges in those counties, and so on and so forth. But she won all the other counties, and some of them by fairly good margins. Now, if he had had, you know, more votes in Fayette, and if he'd gotten something in Northern Kentucky, he still might have overcome it. Because, okay, so she wins a county by 300 votes, you know, which happened. He can overcome that easily in Louisville. But, you know, at this point, Gay, I think it's absolutely right to keep raising those issues because frankly, I want to do it again in November. I want unlimited absentee voting in November because more people get to vote. And when more people get to vote, Democrats win.
My additional comment that I would like to make in regards to that is, you know, we ran into a lot of people, and rightly so, a lot of people that were involved in this process were acknowledging how hard it was to pull all this off. And it was, there is no question. What I find happens, not just this election, but in life in general, is that the people who are sitting at the decision-making table look for solutions from their own lens and their own experience. And so one of the polling officials, when I said, these people have been in this car line for an hour, isn't there something we can do to count that as the line? His answer was, they had 15 days or whatever, his answer. And I'm thinking, he knew that because he was involved in the communication of these days, but people right. who don't have internet, don't have, you know, are working, dealing with illness, dealing with trauma that, you know, that the Black community in particular is dealing with right now, going and seeking out when you can early vote is probably not a priority for a lot of them. So I just want to caution people to not be critical of a community that they themselves don't have lived experience in, especially when that community is also not present in the planning and decision making. So yes, we absolutely need to keep early and mail-in voting open, but we need to make sure that we communicate it and provide access to it and overcome barriers. If the mail takes an extra 6 days to get to families in the West End, but yet my East End friends are getting it in 3 days, that's a barrier. So these are all things that we just have to step back and put ourselves in other people's shoes and say, what, you know, instead of victim blaming and saying, well, they had all this time, why did they wait? Which is what I heard a lot when the answer to the reason why they waited was because they were at risk and they didn't want to come in person. And then the line was so long because someone else hadn't anticipated that. So we just have to be more intentional to make sure that people are not pushed out.
One of the bad things right now is that we're doing this session via Zoom, but I keep forgetting that it's audio only on the radio. So I'm sitting here nodding with you as you do it, but of course nobody can see me nod. No, you're exactly right. And it is often the case that people plan and then deal with problems based on their own experience, and that it's not usually that they are prejudiced in some way. Right. It's that they are not thinking outside their own box.
Right.
And I absolutely agree with that. And the business about not getting ballots, that obviously wasn't just here. That was across the state. People were talking about, you know, I mean, that became the number one FAQ in every session I heard or saw was, if I don't get my ballot, what do I have to do? You know, that was just like everybody. So, yes. The other issue, of course, for the fall is going to be money. Secretary of State Adams has made it plain that as much as we might want to do this in the fall, we can't do it unless there is money to do it with. This was done out of CARES Act money because it was part of the pandemic. And if we don't have that in the fall, we can't do it, because he was talking about the postage alone was $4 million or something like that. So, yeah. All right. Is there anything else? What else do we want to say about this Senate race?
One more thing about the Senate race, and then something about the fall race I've been thinking about. About the Senate race, I had a friend, this sounds like a tangent, I swear it's not, who was an organizer in Alabama. And his big comment was, you know, Alabama is a state, not an excuse. Because okay, so many conversations were, yeah, but we're in Alabama, or we can't do that. This is Alabama, or blah, blah, blah. And so, one of, you know, you see a variation of that in Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I had people who thought Charles was a great candidate, but we can't support him because, you know, this is Kentucky. You know, it's not a state, it's an excuse.
Right. It's a good line.
Did this race put the lie to that? I mean, he didn't get wiped out in any of the counties.
No, no, that's right.
I mean, there wasn't a county where she just killed him.
Yeah. The other thing that I will say about, and maybe we're dancing around it, and maybe we shouldn't dance around it. She got into the race last year. She announced before the governor's race. I mean, she announced last summer. Everybody across the country was so excited to have somebody they thought was viable to beat Mitch. And she has a name and she has a story. And then she got money. And my old friend used to say, the three things you need to run for office are name, story, and money. If you've got one, you might get one of the others. If you've got two, you can get the third. So she did that. But then, you know, she stumbled badly last year, to the point that John Yarmuth, of all people, said, well, maybe we need a primary. Which, you know, if I'd been her, I'd been like, whoa. And then Breuer gets in, and then Booker gets in, and we see what happened here. Amy McGrath went from everybody's favorite candidate in 2018 to what happened to her, you know. And she came across scripted a number of times. She came across being too careful. She came across too safe, too middle of the road, trying to run, it felt like at times, Republican light. I don't think she is, but that's how it felt. And if she's coming at, if she looks at this same screen that we're looking at of the results, and she says 42% of the Democrats in Kentucky wanted somebody other than me, you know, or 45 or 50% if you add them all up, she's got some work to do. She's got some significant work to do to get everybody in the state not only voting for her, but excited about going out and knocking on doors and sending money and telling their friends and putting a yard sign up and so on and so forth. And I hope that she can do that. I hope she can figure out how to do that and to bring people together. It'll be interesting to me to see how her and Breuer and Booker all work together. Breuer has already been very strong. He's already sent emails to his supporters saying, you know, go sign up on her site, get on her email list, send her money, get ready, we got to do this. Booker has not, as much as I've seen.
Well, I think he's waiting because his base doesn't feel like she hears him or hears them. And, you know, one of my biggest disappointments, I was obviously a big fan of Booker, and mainly because I mean, everything that's happening in Louisville, Kentucky, and across the state, everything from us having avoided a state takeover of the largest district in our state to avoiding charter schools and vouchers so far, to having a student assignment plan on the chopping block this month, to Breonna Taylor, obviously, as well as the Senate race. Like, all eyes are on Kentucky, and with with this movement, this Black Lives Matter movement, and this civil rights, human rights movement, Charles Booker is the best equipped person to speak on behalf of Kentuckians and our Black community in particular. And so I felt like when he didn't win, you know, I felt like that might be the end of the conversation really going in the direction that it needs to go for us to truly achieve a grassroots, authentic change, structural changes that need to take place in Kentucky. We are poised to do some really, really great things, and having that messenger on the national front as well, representing us on a national front, and having debates with Mitch McConnell about race and poverty and trauma, I just can't see Amy doing it. So, you know, but the hashtag Booker for Mayor has also come about. I know you mentioned Rand Paul at the beginning of the show. And of course, you know, that would be a step down for him. But at the same time, right now, where we are in the national limelight and where we are in need for structural change and leadership, yeah, I think it would be a phenomenal situation for him to be in.
If he chose so to I'm going to ask you two a question that I want to answer. Okay. So I'll let you answer it first because I have an answer.
Okay.
If you were advising Amy McGrath right now, what would you tell her to do?
I would tell her that she needs to look at other Democratic officials. Amy McGrath, sadly, is the opposite of Bill Clinton. There are a lot of things that Bill Clinton did that I did not agree with. Not in hindsight, but at the time.
Right.
But he could read a political room. You know, I disagreed with things he said, but he was not ever surprised by reactions to things he said. And okay. She is all the time. How could you not know that saying you would have voted for Brett Kavanaugh how could you not know that was going to bite you in the ass?
Right, and even her tweet about the money that Charles raised at the end and how congratulations, now he can finally pay them minimum wage and health care, yeah. Like so tone deaf.
Oh, so. And having that thing out about out-of-state money. 90% of your money's from New York and California, woman, shut up! Right. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And that was another big frustration, is the DNC, the amount of support that the national and the state Democratic Party put behind her campaign. All of our out-of-state friends continued to think that she was our choice.
Right.
And getting them to understand, no, we need you to donate to Booker. Everybody wants Mitch gone. Donate to the candidate that's actually going to do it.
Well, yeah. She has no political instincts at all. If I got, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't have taken 90% of my money from out of state. Well, let's say I did. I wouldn't bring this up.
Yeah.
Right.
I wouldn't be passing out stones when my house is nothing but glass. And you know, I don't know how you teach somebody that kind of what I'm going to call Bill Clinton skills.
Learn to be empathetic like Clinton.
Read the room, right?
Read the room.
Well,
because she can't do.
And I think she needs to meet with Charles and get his support and learn. I think this goes with reading the room, like learn to listen to the people that came out in support of him. But, you know, a lot of people are also going to listen to this broadcast or watch this podcast and condemn us for not getting behind Amy, because, you know, the real goal is to ditch Mitch. And I don't disagree with that. But if Amy is not receptive to the needs of our most vulnerable, our most oppressed, the racism that is coming to light, that now we see, okay, yes, we do have a problem and we need to fix it. If she is not in a position to make those changes in an authentic and sincere way, then I don't see why we should command other voters to come out for her just to ditch Mitch if it's not going to benefit them in any way. And so, yes, I hear the criticism. We should just all unite. The party needs to unite and ditch Mitch. But that goes both ways. The party needs to unite with the voters who don't feel represented by the status quo, who don't feel represented by the establishment, who continues to force its will on Kentucky. Kentucky is a vulnerable state. Kentucky is a poor state. Kentucky has had Mitch McConnell at the helm for in the Senate as our representative in the Senate for 35 years and as Senate Majority Leader for a number of those years, and we're no better off. Why? We have to ask ourselves, what has he been doing on behalf of Kentucky with all this money and power and influence? So, you know, yes, we need to unite. We need to get rid of Mitch, but not if it's just going to be another establishment candidate from the other side who isn't going to necessarily, is not only going to not have the same clout in the Senate, but is still not going to be in tune with those needs. So she has to do something to convince his supporters that she gets it and she's going to make it her number one commitment. And, you know, like I said earlier, being able to have those conversations about race, poverty, and trauma are critical. And somehow she's got to bring that into her campaign.
My answer to my own question is very similar to what you're saying. I was going to say that she needs to leave her staff behind. And she needs to come to Louisville. She needs to meet with Charles privately. But then she needs to meet with the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement. And she needs to meet with some of the other leaders of the protests. And she needs to do so non-defensively.
Right.
And she needs to basically listen. If she wants to bring somebody with her to take notes, that's fine. But she's got to hear and absorb what it was that made people listen to Charles and what it was that they saw in him, right? I mean, Charles, he and Mike both talked about universal basic income. They talked about Medicare for all or some sort of universal health care. Charles additionally talked about racism and talked about police violence. Mike said some things, but he didn't have the same background. She's got to figure out a way to incorporate that. And she's got to figure out a way to incorporate it that she can then share on the campaign trail with other people who might not have thought about it. I mean, she's going to have people out in some parts of the state who are going to have to struggle to hear her talk about them. She's got some work to do there. And frankly, so does the party and the DNC and the DSCC. They all need to understand, they need to look at these results too and say, okay, you know, we picked a candidate and somebody came out of left field and got 42%. We need to take a look at that and decide what we're going to do about it. Now, do I think we should all come together? Yes. Do I think we have to do what we can to get rid of Mitch McConnell? Yes. He is, frankly, if I had to choose between getting rid of Trump and getting rid of McConnell, I'd probably choose getting rid of McConnell because he's destroyed the Senate and is in the process of destroying many other things. But, Gay, you're exactly right. She's got to figure out a way to connect with the people who saw Booker as the right person. So I hope she does. I hope she listens. I hope she hears that.
And I also think that there's down ballot and up ballot benefits to having a strong progressive candidate, because if you can drive turnout to get rid of Mitch, you'll drive turnout to get rid of Trump too. So they go hand in hand. You just have to do what we can to get as many voters out. And I worry that is going to be harder to do with this
particular. I wonder if Amy realizes why Andy won. And if you think he won for a certain reason, you'll do certain things. That is, if you're wrong, you'll do wrong things. And if you realize why he won correctly, then you do right things. I think she felt, although, you know, that your best bet is to be as Republican light as you can be. I don't think that's what Andy did. No. He was openly pro-choice. He was openly, you know, Medicare for all. I mean,
Andy got the black vote.
Andy got the black vote.
The black vote is what put Andy over the top.
So I wonder if that's, I don't think she thinks that's why he won.
I don't think Andy knows that's why he won.
Well, it could be. I don't know.
Well,
he had people working the West End pretty tight.
He didn't hear us when it came to the SB8.
I think that one of the, and this is only my opinion, I certainly have no inside information, but my opinion is that she realizes how big a race this is. I did hear from somebody that she didn't really want to run at first, and they had to persuade her, you know, and they had to say, okay, we're going to give you all this money and all this support, and you can do this. Because they looked across the state and they said, this is a person with name recognition and whatever. And I think that she, unlike the first race, unlike the race against Barr, which was, in my opinion, out of her heart, she looked at him and just went, I can't stand this. You know, and she ran out of passion the first time. This time I think she's running, or she has run, more out of calculus. Okay, we can, you know, we can, all these factors, we can do this, and not out of passion. Now, I could be way wrong about that, but it just feels to me like she is trying to do what the consultants tell her to do.
Right.
Rather than just throwing them out of the room and saying, okay, I'm going to be me, you know. Now, she is not Charles Booker. She's not as progressive. But if you listen to the interview I did with her on the state of Kentucky, I challenged her on that. I said, okay, so what are you going to do to say to progressives? And she basically said, I'm tired of this. She said, if you look at my positions on the major issues, I'm for healthcare for all. She ran down the list, you know? And yet she does a commercial that says, I don't mean Medicare for all. And it's like, well, why did you have to do that, Yvonne, to your point? So I think that she needs to find the passion for this, and she needs to come talk to people that aren't in her circle necessarily.
Well, and one final thought on that, I think it's not even rumor, it's provable that Chuck Schumer is who picked her to run. And I've heard, this is more rumor, but I've heard people say that, you know, the DNC looks at it as, what is our best fundraising opportunity? So they saw her as anyone to run against Mitch. Frankly, when she first said she was going to run, just the fact that she had a pulse was exciting for all of us. We have to admit it. But, you know, if they see the candidate that they're going to pick and promote because they just want to raise money against Mitch, they may or may not even think we have a shot at beating Mitch. Then that undermines the authentic democratic process that's trying to happen in Kentucky. And then on top of that, we have closed primaries, which add an entire layer of complexity to this whole outcome. Because again, if people could have crossed ballot, across party lines to vote for a particular candidate, we would have seen completely different numbers.
I was walking into the Expo Center, right? The day I went over there, the voting day, so I could go over there and do the pictures I did. So I'm walking in from the parking lot, and I was asking people as I went in, how long did it take you to vote? And they're like, oh, man, a minute, minute and a half. It was great. And this one woman heard me ask that, and she turns around and goes, 30 seconds, because they don't let independents vote. I went, oh, I'm sorry.
What are you going to say, right?
But no, I hear what you're saying, Gay, about there might have been some people, you know, who would have wanted to vote that way. So anyway, all right, are we going to talk about some other races?
tell me what other races we should be talking about.
Well, if you look at the congressional races, there's not really anything that's a surprise, except maybe Massey's margins, which I've got up on the screen, in his – I really thought McMurtry would get closer to him, and he didn't. And then this
remind
one –
Remind our viewers, the other guy, McMurtry, was running to Massey's right. Am I correct?
Yes, yes. He was okay. Running as the I Love Trump More candidate.
And –
Good to know that didn't sell.
Ran over him at 81%.
Yeah, he killed him. They like Massey. I mean, that seems obvious, you know, up there. But taking him on is going to be Dr. Alexander Owensby. And that was a race. I mean, I hope that Shannon Faber runs again because she did well. She's a good candidate.
She did better than I thought she would.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what Owensby can do with Massey because I have to say she's fearless. She sometimes is too fearless. sort of comes out there. <Lord. laughs> So there's that one that I thought was interesting. Josh Hicks is going to take on Barr. Here's another one that I just get a real kick out of this. This is the State Senate 7th District.
And where is that?
I wish I knew all my districts. It's Southwest.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly where. But do you see who won the primary? It's a five-way primary. Do you see the name?
Adrian Southworth?
Yes. Do you know who that is?
I have no idea who that is.
That's Lieutenant Governor Jeanine Hampton's aide that got fired by Bevin.
Oh, you're kidding.
She said, I'll show you, I'll run for office. And she won her primary. So I just got a real charge out of looking at that. Let's see. Here's one to watch. State representative from the 6th District, Linda Story Edwards and Al Cunningham.
That was close.
31 votes apart.
Wow.
My.
So are they going to do recounts on these that are close?
They will probably do one on that. And then Pamela Stevenson won the 43rd, which is Charles's seat, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
So whoever wins the primary is going to be the representative. So she is the second Black woman to be elected to the state house. She'll join Attica Scott. See if there's anybody else that's worth talking about.
Travis Brenda race was interesting.
Yes. I was very sad to see that. Travis
Brenda. I didn't know. I thought he was winning.
He lost.
And hopefully there's a recount there. My sources tell me that Mitch McConnell was not happy about Jonathan Schell getting pushed out in the last race. And so he dumped a lot of money into this race.
Could be. My disappointment there is that Travis Brenda is pro-union.
Yeah. And pro-teachers.
Yeah, he's an educator.
Well, he is a teacher, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, so that is a disappointment. Hopefully he does a recount.
Yeah, so he lost by 30 votes.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's just about it. Everything else is fairly – oh, this one. I'd forgotten about this one. Did y'all follow the Yates and Mundy thing in Lexington?
We did not, but I would like to hear more.
Well, so Aaron Yates came to Kentucky from another state where he was a political actor. If you go search for some of the things that he did in another state, you might find some interesting results. I'll just say that. He ran against Mundy. Ms. Mundy had a DUI in the middle of the campaign.
Oh, that always helps your... Yeah.
And so Yates just beat her around the head and shoulders with that. But she filed a lawsuit saying that he was ineligible, that he didn't meet the eligibility requirements. And so that was a drama. Completely up in the air, drama filled race. So he wins. They announced that he won on Tuesday, and Tuesday afternoon, the lawsuit was dismissed. So she lost twice in one day.
So did she claim he had not lived in the district long enough?
I think that was it. Yeah, I think so. Is there anything else? No. All right, so we've talked about all the fun races. So now do you
want to talk? Yates, by the way, will be running against Sherrilyn Stevens, the Democratic incumbent, who took it from a Republican last time.
Right, so I'm hopeful that she can hang on to that thing. So do you want to talk about the fall any? Or do you want to move on to your school stuff?
Let's do some fall.
Well, what do you want to talk about?
If the voting process doesn't look like this, is it going to look like Wisconsin? Because that looks like the alternative.
Yeah.
And for our listeners at home, in Wisconsin, people could not vote absentee. It was very, 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 very limited. And so everybody had to go to the polls, basically, and they were in line for hours, 4 and 5 hours.
Right.
Why would they not say that we did well and we can do better? Like, why would they not try to improve
money? Money.
The COVID money.
Now, what, well, so you balance out what it costs for money versus what it might cost in lives. I think
money's always more important than lives.
Well, there you go. I think it may be interesting to see if they don't do absentee ballots, but they do early voting to space out the voting so people aren't together. They could try to pull that off. I'm very hopeful that we get to do both. I like early voting and I like absentee voting, and you know, let's do it all. But if we don't do it, Yvonne, yeah, it's going to look like we're all standing in line with masks on, trying not to get sick.
Nicole.
Assuming that we don't have the miracle that the president has promised and the virus just go away.
Hey, he built his wall. He didn't specify it wouldn't be around the White House.
Nah. So what else do you want to talk about?
I think that's good. We appreciate your time.
So much.
I don't know that I gave you any great insights, but it was good to talk.
And for our viewers and listeners who were turned away or who did not receive your mail-in ballot, there is also a couple of places that are collecting your data. The Democratic Party has a nice survey that they are collecting information so they can improve their processes and give that kind of feedback. And then also a coalition of organizations are coming together to collect some data from the voters in particular that were either did not receive their ballot in the mail in time and had to come in to vote in person on the day of, or were in the line and maybe didn't get a chance to vote because the car line was so long. We're looking for those individuals. And there's a survey at govoteky.us. It's not .com or whatever the state URL is. It's govoteky.us. And that is a different address, so you can register your lost vote with that group. And it's specifically looking at Louisville, but if other communities come forward and say that they were also experiencing something similar, then if there's enough of that, we'll capture it and look into that as well. So they're doing some open records requests to get data from some of the polling places before the deadlines, just so they can look at the anomalies. Hopefully suggest some improvements.
Excellent. That's a good idea. Yeah. I will promote that.
Excellent.
Thank you, Bruce. And also thank you for being our guest.
Well,
as always, you are lovely and talented and even more importantly, astute.
And he's nice. He's very nice. Thank you, Bruce.
Try to be. Enjoy. All right, ladies. Take care.
You too.
Thanks so much.
So we had a couple things, Yvonne, that we wanted to just wrap up with, right? I wanted to mention the student assignment plan that is on the agenda for July 24th at the school board meeting.
Me interrupt you for our listeners at home. This is a student assignment plan that's been in preparation for months and months and months and months.
Yep.
And on July 24th will be the final vote on it.
I'm hearing that it may not be the final vote. I'm hearing that there is some reluctance to make that decision, but right now it's scheduled for a vote on that meeting, so we need to be getting our communications in, and there are some community forums taking place. There are some surveys out there. We'll be doing some more communication with our families on Dear JCPS between now and July 24th, because as you probably also know, there is a tax increase that has been proposed, and they really do go hand in hand. I think a lot of people are not aware that in order to make the improvements that have been proposed to the student assignment plan, the tax increase must also go through. And so we don't have enough schools in the West End to allow students who live in that community, in those communities, to attend a school close to their home. So we have to build more schools, and we have to invest in programs to make sure that the schools in the West End are comparable to the schools in the remaining parts of our district, so that students do have the choice to choose the school closest to their home, including students in the West End who currently don't have that choice. So the only way we can afford as a district to build more schools is to increase our bonding capacity, which is essentially our lending limits. We can't get bonds for new construction unless we have a higher spending limit, a higher borrowing limit. So this tax increase, which amounts to $70 a year for an average $100,000 home, and with the shifting of resources and reprioritizing of resources, it will save money in the long run. Being able to provide quality education to our families in the West End is not only a cost-saving thing to do, it's also the right thing to do. So in the long run, it will allow us to provide more supports and resources to our families that are most impacted by poverty and trauma and learning disabilities and racial and structural discriminatory policies that exist, because they are real. The fact that students in the West End have to be bused out of their communities and put an extra burden on that family, on those families, is a structural barrier. So those are examples, real life examples of ways that we need to be removing barriers. So the tax increase will be coming up for a vote in November, assuming that the group that is out trying to raise the signatures is successful in obtaining the number of signatures that it takes to get it on the ballot. So it's important to note that the group that is pushing for the petition is has been tied to Americans for Prosperity. In fact, I got my text message today from Americans for Prosperity encouraging me to sign the petition. Americans for Prosperity is an entity that was formed by the Koch brothers, and it's tied to the privatizers that have been pushing the charter schools, pushing the vouchers, pushing the state takeovers, pushing the high testing emphasis, and these are things that take money and resources out of our schools. So if we can flip the script and put money in the front end, we will definitely save money in the back end. But not only that, we will have stronger schools in our communities, which will raise our property values and increase employment opportunities and just be better for the community overall. So there will be more information about that tax increase in months to come. So we also have a pledge. So if you are in support of additional revenue for the district and want to have your voice heard and the ability to negotiate and have a seat at the table as these plans are developed, sign the pledge with us, because we're going to be putting together the demands from the community, and we support this tax increase as long as the district does what it says it's going to do. So, Yvonne, yes.
For our listeners at home, if I'm hot to sign this pledge, where do I go? You know, I'm for public schools and good public schools, and I love kids and I'm looking out for the future.
Yes.
Now, where do I go to sign that pledge?
So that pledge is available at standwithjcps.com, or is it, I think it's .com or .org. I think they both go there. So standwithjcps.org is the domain name that you can go to. There's three things you can do on that website. You can sign,
yay!
You can sign up to be a champion. And what that means is, you know, get your facts together and go into these groups and in these neighborhood places and provide correct information, because we have discovered that there is some misinformation being given, intentionally misleading information to garner the support that they are going to need to get these signatures. I'm not terribly worried about the signatures. I personally want to see this on the ballot because I do think that we need to keep having the conversation. For the same reason I like seeing Charles Booker on the ballot, whether he beat Mitch or not was not as important as, well, actually it was, but being part of the conversation until November is really critical. Because we are on the right side of history. We just need more time to tell our story. And when people see that there is an agenda behind those who don't even live in our community, who are trying to prevent us from raising our own taxes so that we can pay for our own schools adequately, because we know that we've replaced the board, we've replaced the superintendent. We are in a position to do what's best for our schools now. And we just need to push this, you know, kick this little ball over the finish line and deliver on everything that we've been working toward as a community. And I know that the community will rally. I know that the community will support the tax increase. So I'm not terribly worried about it getting the signatures that it needs. But what we do want to make sure is that we have the leverage on the other side to have a seat at the table and be part of that conversation and to negotiate. And so if you've signed the pledge, we have the champions that I mentioned. Then we also have sponsors. So if your organization wants to be an organizational sponsor and coalition member, then there's a place for you to sign on for that. And then, of course, individually, if you sign the pledge to support, then you're giving us your email address and a few other details so that we can follow up with you and keep you updated as the negotiations progress. Because we support JCPS raising revenues as long as we feel confident that they're going to keep their promises that they currently are still negotiating, because we don't even know what the student assignment plan is going to look like yet. But I don't think what they've proposed so far goes far enough. So I think we need to be part of that conversation a little bit longer. And Yvonne, we only have a minute and a half left. So tell us about what you have coming up.
Okay, we are going to have a town hall meeting for teachers and parents. It was originally going to be July 9th. It now looks likely to be July 14th. We're going to try to have teachers and parents from all across the state. And we will be on JCPS Leads, on Dear JCPS, on PTO. Kentucky Teachers in the Know, in Louisville PTO, in SICOUT, in a bunch of places. We will be giving you the details and also how you register.
And this is kind of the back to school town hall, right? Like, what does going back to school look like? So this is a really critical.
Well, what should it look like? It's not directed towards you. I mean, it's not going to be preaching at you. There's going to be breakout sessions for people to voice their concerns and to come up with ideas. Because as Harvard says, we is better than me. All of us together come up with better ideas than just one person.
And we are out of time. So thank you everybody for joining us. And we will catch you next time on Save Our Schools with Dear JCPS.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.